Welcome to Farming Aotearoa with agricultural journalist Peter Burke. Hi folks, and welcome to another edition of Farming Aotearoa for 2025, sponsored by Rural News, the newspaper that gets the top stories to farmers every week. And once again, agricultural journalist Peter Burke, who works for Rural News, is with me in the studio to bring us up to date on what's been happening in the past month. So what's been going on, Pete?
Well, it's a big time of the year. It's sort of the year has got off to a big start, and there's so much around. So first of all, I'm going to talk really about the geopolitical issues, which is the China-America issues.
This is a big one.
It is a big one, and it's something one of the people I was talking to the other day said, we're in the midst of potentially one of the most disruptive periods in our history of our trade, which is big things. And others I've seen are looking despairing about what's happening at the moment, don't know where to go. It's got to the point where you've got Donald Trump out there issuing all sorts of orders, like a corporal. And as you can imagine, no one quite knows what's going to come out of his mouth or his social media next and who's going to be picked off next. And one of the comments that was made to me was that we hope New Zealand doesn't appear on television in America in case he spots us, because we want to fly really under the radar at the moment. New Zealand is in that invidious position at the moment of having its main exporter is China. Number two, of course, is the United States. So, you know, you've got two countries that are seemingly having sort of trade wars of sorts, and that's not helping matters. And New Zealand's got to do what I would call walking on eggshells diplomacy, because it's a matter of not offending anyone. At the same time, however, trying to maintain trade and try to abide by certain rules. The one comment that's made to me was, and it's an interesting one, that with the Chinese doing their bringing their ships into the Tasman Sea and the Cook's issue, the question is being asked, is China really as close to New Zealand as it was a number of years ago? And I think that's a question that's being genuinely asked. There's no answer to it, but I think it's a problem potentially that China is now starting to exert itself, particularly in the Asia-Pacific region. We've seen it with Solomon Islands, we've seen it with Cook's now. And there are areas where New Zealand is very strong or has been the main sort of mediator in terms of the Pacific. But, of course, it goes beyond that. It goes down to the trade with those two countries, and manipulating it and trying to get things right is very, very difficult. And this particular person was at a thing called the ABAC, which is the business people's group that reports to the APEC group. And they are all, no one seems to know quite what's going to happen. I think the certainty is the uncertainty. And that's really, I think, troubling exporters. They're having to be, watch what's happening. The answer is we won't do anything until we know what's happening. And then whatever happens, we've got to be very nimble about that and suddenly be agile and make some quick decisions. So I think everyone's preparing their scenarios to see just what will happen. So that's really the big issue at the moment, as I see it, in the farming sector. And how does that, you know, how does that go? So we are, the other comment that's being made is that it's not going to be the easiest year that we've ever had. We've talked about what's going to be a good year, what's a bad year. Another comment from a leading business person in the primaries, in the red meat sector, is saying to me, this is going to be not going to be an easy year by any stretch of the imagination, and I don't think it is going to be. Yes, there's some slight pickup of lamb prices, and there's good beef prices, but then what happens with China, what happens in Ukraine, what happens with Russia, what happens with, you know, all these things, how do you get some what we call trade diversion? Will product not get into China because of this? Where will it go? It's gone to America in the last few months. That's gone well. Todd McClay is saying that he thinks that the lamb market, the main market for lamb in China, is picking up a little bit, which is good. And I think we're seeing Winston Peters over there at the moment for another reason, but I'm sure that the word lamb will be mentioned at some stage of the game. We have had a few gains there with the free trade agreements in the Middle East, which have been helpful to us. That's been giving us a little bit of leeway there. But fundamentally, most of our stuff goes to these big markets, and that's where the issues are. You know, the other positive for New Zealand with America is interesting. We don't have a trade imbalance between the two countries. Our trading relationship is quite balanced, which means that Trump's probably not going to quite pick us off because we're not doing the right thing. So the traders, and that's one point that's been picked up by a number of experts in the field that I'm talking to, and saying, well, that's a positive. He may just leave us alone a little bit because there was no reason to pick us off. And I think that's a positive for us. But again, I don't think it's going to be an easy year. The prices for lamb are still, they're better, but they're not great. They're still low. And how does our, you know, farmers fare? So it's a really, in my experience, this is one of the most disruptive periods I've ever covered as a journalist. And I've been in that field for 50 years now. I can't recall it being as uncertain as it is now. Even COVID was, I think, more certain probably than
that. Gee. So you know, and this is all because of what's happening.
This is fundamentally Donald Trump going out there and trying to change the world order of everything.
Because nobody really knows what's going to happen and what he's going to say.
We've got the World Trade Organization, which is fundamentally the rules-based body. Yeah. But America says, oh, no, we're not going to have rules-based. We're going to have our rules, not the international rules. Yet, if America opts out of that, then there's still other countries who want to abide by those rules.
Mm.
And it's very, very difficult to navigate that. And I feel for companies trying to sell product, be they meat or dairy or horticulture, whatever it is, into those things. So that's interesting for me.
Yeah, that just sounds dreadful. It just sounds like everyone's trying to work it out.
And no one knows how to work it out. And I've seen a couple of people from the Department of Foreign Affairs, and they look exasperated for good reason. You know, saying, what? And, you know, there's a lot of words you can put, adjectives you can add to after that, but that's really what it comes down to. They don't know where to go.
Gosh. No one does. Okay. Well, then we can't really talk about it too much because we don't really know what's going to happen at the moment.
No.
So talk to me then about
lamb, eh?
Well, lamb. Do you want to talk about lamb a bit more?
Because I think we had a very interesting thing a couple of weeks back where we had National Lamb Day. That's not where you sort of parade them around a showground and pat them and make them for walkies.
That's what I do.
But you actually ate them.
Yeah, no, I don't do that.
Well, I know, okay, but I do. I'm, you know, a bit of a carnivore.
Put ribbons in their hair or something. That's what I do.
But it was a commemoration of the event. It happened in 1882 when the first shipment of frozen lamb left New Zealand on the Dunedin and went to the UK with 5,000 sheep and lamb carcasses. And that started off the meat trade, because up until then our main export had been wool, of course. It hadn't been sheep meat. And now the fact that the refrigeration came into being is significant. And that day was celebrated at an interesting luncheon, a barbecue at Parliament. Behind, you won't see it on the front steps of Parliament, you know, people barbecuing, but at the back they call it the Speaker's Lawn. Jerry Brownlee's little piece of green. There's a little lawn behind there where they set up the barbecues and had the lamb chops there, and we all sat around and drank water and ate lamb chops. It was rather beautiful. And all the main players of the industry was there. The politicians were there. They donned their T-shirts and came out there. We even had Christopher Lux in there in a T-shirt. He got rubbished a bit, Freddie. He came there just barely on time, and someone said, put on a lamb T-shirt, which he put over his suit, which probably wasn't exactly the style. I would have put that in my corporate style guide, probably, and others have rubbished him for it. I mean, it doesn't really matter. I think the guy turned up. He was pleasant and nice. A few snide comments about him with a chop. Is he going to eat it, or is he going to be for the chop if the bowls keep going the other way? There was a few little puns circulating around. But the fact is that the sector is very important to New Zealand, the meat sector. There's something like 76,000 jobs, you know, are part of that. And so it was entirely appropriate to celebrate our sheep, our lambs, what they do, and also the farmers that do it. I think the one of the comments was made by Minister Todd McClay, you know, this is a time to congratulate the people who produce these animals, the people who take them off the farm, transport them, who supply the farmers. It was a celebration and a recognition of the work that's been done on and around the farm. So that was, you know, quite a good thing to do. I enjoyed myself. I had a few lamb chops and a chat to a few people, and it was quite fun. Although, interestingly, I live on the Kapiti Coast, as you know, and it was 4 degrees warmer here than it was down in Wellington.
Of course.
So, yeah, it was.
Oh, you didn't have enough
I had to increase my clothing allowance on that day to enjoy the barbecue. It was quite cold in Wellington.
Yeah, well, they need good wool down there jumpers. Yeah. And carpets. We need to go back to wool carpets, get rid of this nylon rubbish.
Yeah, I don't know why. It seems to me that people still don't want to. They talk about sustainability, but frankly, it's just greenwashing in most cases. They're sustainable as long as they can, as long as it's affordable, seems to be the answer to
me. I think that is the answer. Yeah, they go, that's too expensive.
It's like, you know, organic food. People will buy it as long as they can afford it.
Yeah.
And I think in tough times, you have to be respectful of people making economic decisions. Yeah. That's the reality. And wool is great, but it does have its limitations. And yeah, it's hard.
Yeah.
I'm a great fan of wool. I love it. It's a lovely, lovely product. Who doesn't like it? But if you're going to put it in flats, are you going to put it in something that lasts or something that gets, that's expensive and then gets damaged and doesn't last the distance? That's the problem with it. You know, I think that's half the issue. But yeah, there's a lot of work going on to try and to reinvigorate the wool industry, which is great. But I'm not so sure it's going to be, you know.
Yeah.
It's going to pick up a lot.
Okay. Well, talk to me then about New Zealand, how they might deal with climate change and the Paris Agreement.
Yeah, we've got this outfit called Groundswell. Have you heard of Groundswell? They're sort of the renegade farmer group. They're saying, get out of Paris. We don't want Paris. You know, Paris is, this is the agreement on climate change, because what they're saying is that it doesn't favour New Zealand. It tends to discriminate against New Zealand, and we're trying to be the goody-goodies. And yet, are we just being silly enough to comply with the wishes of the of a green element that thinks it's a good idea? But is it good for New Zealand farming? And I'm not giving an answer to that, but there are certainly that there was questions being asked about whether New Zealand should go with the agreements in Paris, or whether we should just opt out of it and say, well, blow it, you know. And there's a comment being made now that if we go on with some of the agreements, then it will result in more somewhat productive land going into forestry. And there's a lot of anti-forestry viewer at the moment. And we're seeing some issues around that too, because a lot of that land on the hill country now is not getting the fertiliser on it that it used to get on. We're constantly, you can recall, you know, the tiger moths were around, dumped superphosphate on the hills. They were green, beautiful, and it was good. But the fertility is coming out because farmers don't have the money, the sheep and beef farmers don't have the money to do it. And the first thing that goes generally is the fertiliser. It goes, or at least for some it goes. And that's a big issue for New Zealand at the moment. And then once you start to continue to not put fertiliser on, how long does it take to that land to come back? The comment made to me was that it would take 5 years in the case of the South Island, probably 3 years in the case of the North Island to bring it back to where it was now. So that's quite a significant time. And some have raised the question around succession of farms. For example, if you're a couple, you're in your mid-60s, your son or your daughter doesn't want to continue the farm work, what you want to really get out of it, and you want to live somewhere nicely, you can't blame them in some ways for saying, I'll sell it to whoever pays the most money. It's a bit like years ago when I was involved in lifestyle farming, and I still am to some degree, but I was at a meeting once with farmers who were complaining about lifestyle farmers. And I said to them, well, there wouldn't be lifestyle farmers if people like you didn't sell them the land. there was silence in the room. I don't think I ever got invited back to that group again. But that's the truth of it. That,
yeah.
You know, it is that that people want to understandably maximise their return on what they've spent their lifetime doing. And if the sons, daughters don't want to do it, and if no one wants to buy it for farming, then can you blame them? I can't. It's hard.
You can't, especially after the first story you were talking about.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the problem is, and also what we're seeing now in some of those farms where the couples are getting older, they're moving away from sheep because they're harder to manage. They're going to cattle, which are easier probably. You know, with sheep, you've got shearing, you've got all those sort of things, lots of things. Whereas with cattle, you let them graze. They're simpler to manage. And we are seeing a shift towards a slight shift towards cattle numbers coming up, and obviously the sheep flock is declining. It has done for many years. It's still in decline. It probably will continue to decline. Although, to be fair, the sheep sector, to my mind, is one of the most efficient we've ever got. We are producing, with about half the number of sheep, we're still producing, I think it's only less than 7% of the lamb we were producing 30 years ago. So what we're getting is more used, having twins and multiple births. Therefore, the number of lambs being raised for slaughter is good. And therefore, and to be fair, lamb is a bit of a luxury now. It's not the...
Mm.
I mean, I suppose in my era, my mother and I can cook lamb quite well, but a lot of people today want a recipe to cook lamb. Do a roast. I mean, chuck it in the oven with a few bits of kuma, a bit of everything. It's lovely, but some people find that difficult. I don't know. That's just life the way it goes, I suppose.
I can't comment. I don't cook meat, so...
No, but I love it, and lamb is my favourite food, but it's got to be cooked well. That's one of the comments about it.
All right, well, talk to me about Dairy New Zealand running out of cash.
So what's happening is that over the years, Dairy NZ have the right under the law to take 5 cents per kilogram of milk solids that farmers produce and use that money to fund their own industry good organisation called Dairy NZ. What they're saying now is that they've only been taking, I think, 3.5 or something cents, 3.6 cents per kilogram. It's not enough to keep the organisation going. And for 17 years, they've lived off that amount of money. They've then been calling on their reserves to make up the difference. Now they're saying, OK, it's time to come face reality. We want you to either come to at least 4.6 cents per kilogram or else ideally up to 5, which is the maximum they can do under the law at the moment. And at the moment, there's a feedback session taking place. It's not a referendum, it's not a vote, it's simply a case of Dairy NZ asking farmers, what do you think, what would you prefer to do? It's not a vote on the levy itself. The levy itself is voted upon every 6 years, and that's not the levy. It's simply to get feedback. It's fair to say that there's been a number of issues affecting that, because the government's cut their funding for science for dairy by something like 60% over 10 years. And that's causing a lot of problems. They've got to back that up in some way. And I think that, you know, that they've been drawing down $2 or $3 million a year in the last 2 or 3 years to keep the place going. I think they're saying, right, time's up, mate. You know, we have to front up with your money.
So, okay. Yeah.
I'm going to talk next a little bit about an interesting event that happened last week. I want to talk about Ahu Whenua. Last week we had the launch of the announcement of the finalists in this year's...
When you say last week, sorry, give us the date.
11th or 12th of February.
Of February, okay. Yeah. Yep.
Okay, at Parliament, where we announced the finalists in this year's competition for the top Māori sheep and beef farmers. And a very well-attended function in the Beehive, where we had the Ministers of Māori Development, Tama Potake, and Todd McClay, the Minister of Agriculture, present, and we have the two finalists came down from a long way away. One of them is way up in the north, past about 2 hours out of Whangarei, which is amazing. Out on the coast, it's a...
Oh, gorgeous. It sounds wonderful.
It sounds beautiful. And, yeah. And then the other one is on the Mahia Peninsula. Now, the story about the Mahia Peninsula one is fascinating, because that's where Peter Beck, Rocket Man, is launching his satellites from.
Ah.
On their farm. So they've actually got... They farm sheep and beef, and they also sent off the odd rocket. They were lovely people, and we had a very lovely day with these individuals who came down and mixed with us and talked to us. And in the coming weeks, there's going to be field days held at both of those two properties, up in Northern Norworth and in Mahia, and the public are welcome to come along to those and see them. They're very beautiful farms, and you know, I think we've got to look and say, well, This is some pretty interesting stuff, and these guys are just amazing. They're very dedicated people, and it just shows where Māori is going in terms of agriculture. One of the comments made by a previous winner, and she's now chair of the group that runs the competition, Nukuhoa Hadfield, you know, that if you look at the rise of Māori collectors, which we mean that's the incorporations, the trust and so forth, back about 10 years ago, their value was somewhere around, I think it was $6 billion, their assets. 10 years later, they're worth $19 billion.
Wow.
So you ignore Maori agri at your peril in many ways, because it is very big, and these farms are part of that grouping. They're both trusts and incorporate. One's a trust, one's an incorporation. One of them, the northern one, is farming mainly bulls. They've just got their land back. They're just doing fattening bulls, which is good for them up there. The other one at Onanui is a mixed farm of sheep and cattle, and again, you know, doing very, very well. But there, we sort of forget. We all head up State Highway 1 to whatever we do up the middle. But I'm looking forward to getting out on a serious road trip, because I'm going to actually drive up to Northland, which everything's so mad to do. But, you know, the Irish have got a strong tradition of being mad, so I don't want to lose that, break that tradition at all. I'm going to drive there and see it and just go and have time to look at the coast and admire where they are. I've seen pictures of the place, and it looks absolutely beautiful on this east coast of the North Island, both of them. So we're very delighted to have these people along and to see their farms, and we'll get good numbers along to the field days, which are very important. People can go along there and see what the farm's doing. The farm puts on a display that they used to go get on a quad bike or whatever, go around it, see it, presentations, and then expecting good fish kite work. We might get a bit of crayfish out of mahi. That's what everyone's saying we should do. The guys were saying, oh, well, you might have crayfish sandwiches for lunch or something like that, and that seems to be pretty good to me.
Gosh, this sounds very posh.
Yeah, crayfish and bubbly would be pretty good for me, but anyway, we won't get the bubbly, but I might come with a few crayfish to go into that. So, yeah, that's the big Maori issue at the moment, and I think we're looking forward to seeing, you know, that we've got the final function of the year will be in Palmerston North this year, so there's a big gala dinner. We'll get about 850, maybe 900 people to that.
It's amazing.
It's amazing things. Yep. So, yeah.
Hey, talk to me about this gene technology bill.
Yeah, it's interesting. We've got a situation now where the government have introduced a bill to free up or to make a much more liberal approach to the use of gene technology. Mm. We've had a ban on outdoor technology for 30 years now, and this is allowing that to happen, supposedly. But we're also seeing that while the primary sector are generally in principle in favour of the idea, we are seeing quite a few of them saying, well, yes, but you haven't consulted very well on this. And there's quite a bit of sniping around the ankles of government for introducing it so quickly and giving a very short period of time for the industry good organisations such as Beef and Lamb and Dairy NZ and others to give feedback. And what I'm picking up is that farmers don't feel they know enough about it. There was a group of farmers who are absolutely in favour of gene technology. You can do what you want to. Good, great. Others who say, no, we don't want it because we think the risks are too high. And then there's a whole group of them in the middle who think, well, I don't quite know what I want. The interesting thing for me in this is that that science can do a lot of things, but this bill is also going to put the political stamp on it, because science is not so much what the scientists say we can do, it's what the politicos say what we'll allow the scientists to do. And this bill is before Parliament's Health Committee, as opposed to a sort of primary sector one that's going to the health one. And we've been through this. If we go back 20-odd years ago, there was the Royal Commission on Genetic Modification, which I remember being involved in that. This is not quite the same thing, but the same issues have been talked about. You know, does New Zealand want to be GE-free still, or should we be looking at gene editing? And I think there's certainly benefits in gene editing, because we're seeing there are options now that maybe we can create grasses which are impervious to insects and so forth. That would be good for New Zealand. The question always arises is, if you achieve one thing, will you cause another thing? It's a cause and effect, I suppose, is what you can call it. That's the big thing that's on people's minds at the moment. Is this going to be, if we can solve that problem, but will we create another one? And how can you do it? I think the idea of having field trials is quite important for the scientists, because in the past they've had to go to places like Australia to do a lot of their stuff. They can't do it here. And to have that ability to do it will be, I think, probably good. However, a lot determines, and what I'm seeing from the submissions I've read, and I've only read three of them, I've read Dairy NZ, Beef and Lambs, and I've read Ag Researchers, actually. There are some caveats in saying how should this be managed? Should there be, are the potential benefits being weighed correctly? Is this, if we go down this track, will it affect market access? Will some countries say, no, we don't want anything that's got, genetic modification? In what form is it? I mean, at what level do you go in? There may be something around gene editing they'll say yes, but genetic modification they may say no to. I don't know the answer to that, but certainly we're seeing that that there is possibilities there, but there's also those who are sceptical of that still. And nothing much has changed. I think the world has moved on than the Royal Commission, 21 years ago, with Jean Fleming and others who were involved in that. But there's still those who think, maybe not. So I think there's some moves around the organisations that have submitted to perhaps tightening up some of the legislation a bit, to tightening some of the definitions in that. What does climate change mean? What does that mean? What does this mean? I don't know enough to give you the exact answers, but certainly the questions are being asked of the select committee. Who knows what will come out of it, because it's got to be reported back to Parliament, and I guess the government will have the right to do whatever it wants to at the end of the day. It's their call. But it's a bit like these other things we're seeing now. We're seeing the idea of having live exports of animals by sea. That legislation is coming through the system. So, and these are things which have been... I think Labor's been opposed to gene editing, but I think certainly on the live exports they were opposed very strongly, and still are. How are these things going to fit? And I think there's a lot of farmers who don't absolutely agree with what's being done, however that might be. It's just I think certainly farmers are telling us that we want more information. We're not prepared to say, give you a complete tick of approval until you prove to us that you've got this right. And that's where it's at. It's a very interesting period of time. So,
yeah. Understandable, because it's like, if it goes through, then how do you get it back if it's wrong? So I can understand it.
Yeah, so that's really what's going on at the moment.
Okay, we haven't got much time left, but I did want to ask you about the financial crisis for Hawke's Bay, for the orchards there.
Yeah, what we're seeing there is, it's interesting that while we're starting to see some restoration of orchards, a lot of those orchards are still in the black, and some of them are saying... we're planting our trees, we're getting money, we're getting loans, but in the end we probably won't. We'll probably sell our orchards. We probably can't afford to keep on going because the debt levels, if you look at replanting, you're not going to get a commercial crop off for, say, 5 years. So you've got to live with 5 years of nothing, really. And then they're saying, well, to get the return on investment, it's probably 12 years out. And one of the orchards I spoke to was saying that a number of orchards are now selling off some of their land, some of their parts. Others are looking at getting investors in. Some are selling outright, or may sell outright, but they won't sell until they've got it to the point where an investor might come in and buy it. They're saying an investor will not buy into a disaster, but they might buy into what looks like a pretty good going concern. They can see the benefits, and they're prepared to take a long-term view. The interesting thing for me is everyone talks about overseas, but I wonder whether Māori will be an interesting buyer in this. And because Māori see things in a long-term view. They take a long-term view. And I just wonder whether we might see, as opposed to overseas people coming in or Chinese coming in, we might see Māori just take a look at some of this stuff and say, maybe that's for us. We can buy it now, and that's for our future
generations.
Next generations. And because they're such intergenerational farmers, their view is quite different. Their view to getting the cleanup is quite different to the Pākehā version in most cases. It's saying we want to do it right so that the next generation can see it perfectly good. It's a different approach.
Yeah.
And that's becoming now more mainstream. So that's really the... So we've got some busy times coming up next month or so. So
do you want to do? We're going to need a longer program, I think, Peter.
I know.
What's going on?
I'm just keeping, and we've got Central District Field Day coming up soon next month too. So
which field day, sorry?
Central Districts. That's in Manfield, up in Fielding. That's on And that'll be, that's sort of a regional field day. We've got regional field days in Northland and the South Island and at Manfield. So they're all part of the game.
Fantastic. Well, it's another episode of Farming Aotearoa, sponsored by Rural News. Thanks, Pete.
This program was made with assistance from New Zealand On Air for radio broadcast and through the accessmedia.org.nz website. Thank you, New Zealand On Air.